Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Thursday, and that means it's time to meet your maker. This is the show where you do exactly that. I'm your host, Rachel Wharton. My guests today are Aaron Daly and Brian Weissman, who together run the year-old Brooklyn Metalworks in Prospect Heights, Brooklyn, just down the street from the Barclays Center, which is appropriate because it's also made out of metal. The Brooklyn Metalworks, they can describe it better. Feel free to interrupt me. It's a cooperative space. People can rent space. They can rent time lockers. They also teach classes. It's kind of everything you would want to do with metal. People can rent tools and all that jazz.
And we have artist lectures as well as exhibition space.
Oh, yeah. Well, right. And so they're both here today because this is obviously a show about food, because both of them have work. I've just learned this new tableware. Their work has something to do with eating and food, or and in certain cases, some of it's useful. Like you could think pieces that you could actually use at in your kitchen or at your table. And in other ways, it's just riffing on the tools that used to be useful. And in addition to their own works, they've recently curated works from around the country along the same theme. But I want to start with, I would love for you both to tell me, this is like we've just started our first day of class and we're going around the room. For me, tell me your specialties, and because I'm sure there's lots of like beats within metalsmithing, your specialties and also how you came to this particular work.
I have always been interested in the tabletop as a place where people use pieces of utensils, serving ware, essentially tools in the kitchen, either as a social interaction or as a ritual, a daily ritual that often gets taken for granted. So I like
the tools themselves.
Yes. Yeah, becomes part of, everybody has a favorite cereal spoon or a mug.
It's true, they do. I do.
And so I'm interested in how people interact with these objects in a way. So that's how I have always come to it. And I love food and I love cooking. So looking at different cultural aspects of how people interact.
Is this going back to when you were in school, or is it something you were focused on even then?
It's something that I've always been interested in, but definitely grew out of learning more about the field and the making when I was in my different programs over the years.
And do you have particular metals or forms or sizes that you traditionally work in?
Well, it's always great to work in silver.
Right.
But I have done a lot of work in copper, too, for the pieces that are more art-driven. Because I like the way it interacts with different... I did a lot of work with salt and copper, and I like the way they interact together. So that,
But in metalsmithing, is silver's the jam, like even more than gold or anything else?
If you're working in a larger scale...
It is. Like silver's the holy grail.
If you can.
The materials, because it's expensive. Oh, Brian, so tell me about... Okay, so tell me about you, Brian. I've just passed you your sheet of toilet paper. Do you remember that from camp?
Yeah. I like making stuff, and I love the cultural and historical significance of the objects that I make. And so I have kind of, or I like to think that I have more of a traditional silversmithing background, and then I use those skills or abilities to basically subvert, you know, and kind of bring in outside conversations, you know, that are kind of attached to the table or attached to the objects that you use. So,
and what Aaron's work could literally be used in many cases.
Sometimes.
Yours is often
left. Not so usable.
Yes. And because this is radio, I feel like if you can describe a piece that really exemplifies what you two do.
Well,
I took some pictures. If we need some visual aids, I went to visit their studio yesterday and took lots of pictures.
Some of the stuff that I've been working on lately is really just pretty simply just cutting apart things. And And I do it in different ways, but it pretty much renders the object completely, you know,
you're working with found objects.
Yeah. So recently I've been taking like silver plate teapots and flatware and stuff like that and just kind of destroying them with the saw, but kind of in an intentional way. And so you can pick up different ideas that like some of the objects look like they've been skinned like a cat, or right. Others look like they're splayed open like the map, and then some of them look like they've just been shattered and like something you'd find in the ground.
And when you say a saw, we think of like this giant tool, but it's actually a very delicate, gentle,
it's a
small
jeweler's saw blade, and so it looks
it's a hair's breadth.
Yeah, like thicker than a hair, but kind of the idea. So you can do really fine, detailed little cuts without destroying the object. Like if you tried to take it to a bandsaw. Sorry.
Well, the piece that I remember from seeing them last night that I was really enchanted with was you took a normal spoon, like the kind that is sitting in every single listener's drawer right now,
mm-hmm.
like that you could find at any Goodwill for a quarter, maybe not these days. And then you had taken your saw and you had like broken it open, the bowl of the spoon mm-hmm. open, right? And you tell me a little. You were telling me yesterday what that meant to you, like why you did that. It was referencing dips, mm-hmm. I think.
I don't remember, but. Well, I mean, with that specific piece, it was kind of like a soup spoon. So, kind of like if you dipped in a soup spoon to like take a little, like you'd get that meniscus, that little arc that would go across it. And so, at that arc, it just starts to kind of deteriorate, like one of those leaves that's completely eaten away. So, but I mean, the idea behind that is a lot of the stuff is just deteriorating, like the practice of making it. Like nobody really needs a tea server anymore, or mm-hmm. like flatware that's really made from silver, or even this fancy stuff. I mean, people nowadays, they eat with their hands, and you know, they just chew it up off the plate or something like that. But
true.
But it's like the whole history and like the whole the context of eating, and things are shifting and changing, and so it's just interesting to me, these evolutions and how these objects are being like left behind or forgotten.
And you're literally breaking them apart.
Yeah, to mm-hmm. kind of, I guess.
That's the thing. Well, before Aaron, we hear about what you've done. You in the, because the front of the space is open to the public, and there's an exhibit right now from a guy named Jaden Moore.
Yes.
And so his work, he uses some of the same pieces as inspiration that you do, which is traditional silver serving pieces.
Well, he uses silver plate, and his work is really interesting because what he loves to do is capture the history of the object, from everything from the maker's mark, what's stamped on the back, to like the drags of the tray as it's been used. So he, with some of the work that he uses, he actually cuts it apart and then makes prints off of it. And so he'll show the front, you know, like the fancy part, and then he'll show the back that has all the wear in it. And they're very like beautiful ghost-like prints in some regards to the backs. But then he also, in the same body of work, kind of there's like a lot of decorative engraving that's on the surface, and he'll start to marry those together so that they start to kind of blend into each other. And it's kind of a one of the pieces is called mitosis, and so it's kind of like the cell that's splitting, and you can kind of see it as he works with some of the trays, how like it's
starts out as one tray and then becomes two over the series of six pieces.
And the one that is one tray is actually the two of them together. Is that right, or is it just one of them?
It's just one of them.
Just one. And but so he like weaves together the two patterns of these two different. It's really fascinating, and I was really also fascinated by the, like there's three lines of text on the back of one of those platters. You know, it's the people who gave the silver to a couple, I guess, and it was their wedding day, and there's so little information, yet it says so much. It, to me, it was just really spellbinding. And your pieces are the same way. It's, you just think so much about exactly what you said. It's like these silver used to mean so much to people, and it was passed down and cared for, and it was the most important thing you got when you got married, and now it's that isn't the case anymore.
It's not the case. Yeah. But I mean, and then there's like all these other aspects to it that are also really interesting. Like, I mean, the whole structure of eating, you know, like in all of the silverware that would have all these specific things.
Uses.
And it's, so I mean, it kind of goes on and on. These, you know, really I mean, in some regards, you know, stuff that goes on the table, but it has like these larger implications that's just kind
for society and how we've changed.
Exactly.
Whoa. I need to write a big thesis about this. Have you been working on this already? It's really fascinating.
Aaron reads a lot of these books.
Yeah. Yes, we came here together since I live around the corner. I didn't know this until last night that I live around the corner from that wonderful space that I encourage everyone to go visit, especially because there's another tiny gallery next door, the Shoebox.
Soapbox.
So I'd like, so the next time you're drunkenly stumbling home from a game at Barclays Center, go up towards Vanderbilt and visit these two places. But Aaron, tell us a little bit about some of your favorite pieces and why they came to be, or what inspired you. Such a cheeseball question, I apologize.
Well, I mean, I come at it from both angles. So on one hand, I am making sincere work that is in silver, and it is meant to be used. And so it's kind of the opposite of where Brian is coming from with these old pieces. And I do think that there is a place for people to be able to look to, you know, the hand-wrought object and be able to purchase one or two pieces and have a favorite thing that gets used on a regular basis, hopefully, and not just shoved away in some drawer. So I am invested in that kind of making, but I also like to also riff on the concepts and ideas behind disposable culture and the methods of eating. So I've done a series that's not just silverware, where I have taken disposable paper products, like disposable tasting spoons from the ice cream shop, disposable paper cups, disposable Chinette paper, and then used Japanese lacquer over them to build up the surfaces. And that's just like a very time-intensive, labor-intensive process, but yet it still at the end has the reference point of the Chinette plate.
Right.
And then I'm hybridizing it with other silver elements to talk about the historical aspects of making.
So you added more decorative elements to these Chinette pieces as the kind of blending formal with informal?
Yes.
Oh, that's really fascinating. Are there pictures of that anywhere?
Yeah, I have them online, and they will be on display this weekend at another little gallery shop or gallery space around the corner on Bergen. Called Where? Open Table.
Open. Oh, really? That's just a coincidence, though.
Yeah, I think the name of the show is maybe Lotus.
That's cool. Bergen and what?
Between Carlton and Vanderbilt.
I did not even.
It's brand new. This is their opening this weekend. Oh. Yes.
Open Table. I'll have to check that out. The other thing that we were on the way here, you were telling me about, because this has been something that you've been interested in for so long, like all the interesting threads that you followed. So tell me a little bit more about that BBC show that we were talking about on the way here.
Oh, the Institute of Making, where they were using the different spoons made from the different metals,
right,
and how it affected flavor and taste. Yeah, and you could hear them tasting. And then talking about, you know, how tin affects the flavor, what the mouthfeel is like, and how silver affects or doesn't affect flavor.
Right. At all.
No, it's relatively.
I had never thought about the mouthfeel of the metal or what was behind what I was consuming before, the thing that was delivering it to me.
Right.
Which are those things that you think about when you create tools that are, yeah.
Absolutely.
Aaron also goes around and fixes all the forks in New York City.
Really?
So. I can't.
Openly, or is this like a secret project?
No, openly. I can't stand it when my fork is crooked, and I'll just do whatever I just sit there and I'll bend it. Like, I'll clean it off and I'll bend it.
You're at a restaurant.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's nothing like a bent fork in my mouth. I can't stand it.
It does happen a lot. Spoons, too.
Yeah. Well, when I was in undergrad and I was in my first foray of understanding flatware, I found a flat fork that had been run over a million times in the street or this sidewalk or wherever it was. And I washed it up real well and I threw it in the cutlery drawer with my four roommates. And it was hilarious because everybody hated the flat fork.
Uh-huh.
Everyone would accidentally grab the flat fork out of the drawer and use it. And it was this great example of how that small little bend that occurs in the fork completely changes its function.
Right.
And if you try and use a flat fork the way you expect a regular fork to work, all of a sudden it just doesn't do it anymore. And it just ticks you off and you're like, great, I have a stupid flat fork. So
I feel like you could almost cut your mouth on it as well.
No, it wasn't. You wouldn't get that far. Fork. Because it just, like, the act of, like, trying to pick up the food and then delivering it to your face is just off.
Is it the angle of the, like, if it's just barely curved, it's not enough either. It needs to be, like, truly bumped.
Well, I mean, you can play around with it.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, each utensil is going to have a different shape to it, depending on how it needs to exist. But
we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with more from Brooklyn Metalworks.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. You know, there's no more telling aspect, no more revealing virtue of a group of people having evolved in a lovely way than how they feed themselves, how they entertain, how they put food on the table, what they put on the table. Heritage Radio Network provides the clearest evidence that there's hope for us yet. Heritage Radio's like Fairway Market in that we both care deeply about what you're having for dinner tonight. Heritage Radio Network is not just about food. Every time I tune in, I learn something about things other than food, too. Architecture, design, stuff like that. But from where I stand, I still say, if you can't eat it, what's the point? For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Trust in them above instinct, a seed objective review.
Welcome back to Meet Your Maker. Today we are talking to Aaron Daly and Brian Weissman, the founders of Brooklyn Metalworks and Prospect Heights. Before the break, we were talking about flat forks. And I guess you recently curated... the thing you curated, it was meant to be integrated with actual... with people. People were actually supposed to be eating. So tell me about a little bit about that event and why you wanted to do that.
Me?
Either one of you. You can talk over each other. Thanks for great radio.
So the event was with Brooklyn Creates, called Brooklyn Creates, and it was with Brooklyn Glass, and it was a good event. I guess the way that Aaron originally intended it and the way that we had always seen it was like we would basically work with a chef and we would create like objects that they would create food, and that these would come together, and like it would be a really interesting dining experience. And we thought we wanted to do this with Brooklyn Glass, and they would do the same.
And so for this event, Brooklyn Glass created glassware that was available for the guests to drink beer from Bitter and Esther's.
Uh-huh.
And then we were working with Landhouse and for their skewers for the bacon and the butternut squash that they had for the guests. And so there was the glassware from Brooklyn Glass and the skewers from Brooklyn Metalworks. And then we had several other artists that were displayed in the pop-up shop, as well as some of the pieces that were being used on the floor for like dishing out different chutneys or cutting different cheeses and things like that, so that the guests could actually work with some of the implements.
I saw the skewers last night, and they were really beautiful. You had made them out of a couple of different metals.
Yeah, we have the ID skewers that are five different shapes, and the decorative element on the end was cast in either white bronze or yellow bronze, and then soldered to a steel skewer. And then they were all steel. Some of them were like square stock that was decoratively twisted, uh-huh, that you see a lot in wrought iron.
How many man hour lady hours go into, like, are they time consuming to make and create?
We busted these out pretty fast.
So that's something that could be scaled up if someone wanted to actually, like, you could this is something that could work for a party for 100. Yeah, possibly.
Exactly. Well, we had to make them with the production aspect in mind. And the people that were creating work specifically for this event, by and large, were also making them with the production aspect in mind so that they could be reproduced. Maybe they'd be slight variances because they're handmade, but with the general aesthetic still there.
What were you going to say, Brian?
I was just looking at the Jesus Christ.
Oh man, take a slice. Welcome to Chew. We just got our pizza. Go ahead.
We made these cures. I guess there was a really short window for us to do this, and we probably made them in a couple of days, but it was a lot of time in those couple of days. So,
but we pared down the making aspect as much as possible just so they could.
Is that something that you have to do a lot, or is that rare? Which is
work really hard, really quickly.
Well, no, not that per se, but work for functionality, like preparing a lot of things quickly that were then going to be used.
Well, in jewelry, yeah, quite often.
Because you have to make multiples of something or...
Yeah, if it's a production piece, yeah. But if it's a one of a kind, you know, you can't really set out to understand the time it's going to take to endeavor on a new project if you've never made it before.
Who is that? Who came to the event? Were they food people or were they art people or both?
That's still a question where we don't know who a lot of the guests were, which was exciting. You know?
Right. That is cool. Because a lot of times things like that, it's like if it's new people who kind of come accidentally, then you open them up to everything.
Right. Well, and we... there were people who were from the glass world. There were people who were from the metals world. There were people who were chefs who were sourcing new product. So, the restaurant world.
And that's something you're hoping to do to do more of, is to partner with chefs.
Yeah, to continue this idea where we can, collaborate and create an aesthetic experience for whoever is enjoying the meal.
And some would be functional and some would be non-functional.
Well,
yes, probably.
Maybe we'd have the non-functional kind of hanging out on the wall or something.
Or in like the centerpiece.
The centerpiece, exactly.
Yeah.
I feel like that one Jaden's piece, the big swirly. I could see fruits and vegetables inside that, right? But he let that happen.
Flip it over and use it as like a fountain for cheese.
Oh, or chocolate fondue.
Yeah, or leave it the way it is and do a chocolate fondue.
It could be a luge. It could be a shot luge. You turn it on the side. Would he be okay with that? Is it a he or a she?
He's pretty amiable to most things.
Yeah, he'd be okay. Yeah. We could do that. No problem.
Oh, so tell me about some of the other pieces that you got from other parts of the country.
Well, let's see.
And they need a home.
Yes.
A display home, if anyone's listening.
Yeah.
Or a home to be used in.
Yes.
Okay, people, you can buy them.
Some of these are purely functional. I mean, not pure, but I mean, they're like beautifully functional. Like Corey Acklemire's spoons are like just these beautiful petite,
silver teaspoons.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm looking at those. And then there's some like almost wrought iron.
From the Smith shop in Detroit. Yeah, those are both, a combination of blacksmithing. And
those are totally functional too.
Yes.
I mean, they're made to last and work, and they're, beautiful to handle too.
And then there's your spoon, the broken apart.
Totally useless.
No, I think there's a use.
No,
I bet there is.
Yeah.
I could see a chef. See, I feel like you need to find a really high-end chef that makes like beautiful one bite, 20 course long dinner. And they develop the food even for the things. Like I could see that spoon, which is this. There's pictures of some of this stuff on. I might post some to the Heritage site because I took a bazillion pictures last night. Like your spoon, I could see it if it had like something lacy that could fit over the, or maybe it could even be like molecular gastronomy where it slowly goes through the. I think that it could be really amazing collaboration. Oh, and then I'm looking at my pictures. There's Lucy, your. Okay, go ahead.
I was gonna say Lucy Perluck's ring.
Cheese knife.
So it's like a cheese knife on one of the rings and a little fork on the other ring, and it's a nice combination between the jewelry world and the utilitarian.
So it's like this. It's like a silver ring that wraps around your finger, and at the end is a little fork.
Yes,
that are made for cheese plates, and then there's these beautiful ladles, and one's pewter, and I think one was.
Oh, and the bronze. Ones by.
Katie Rurick.
Mm-hmm. Some really amazing cleavers. Mm-hmm. Like really heavy duty
the Smith
cleavers.
Shop again.
And then you have this beautiful, to me it looks almost like Frank Lloyd Wright spatula.
Oh yeah, there's right some here. Reference there.
Yeah,
yeah, with the geometric
it's really,
piercings.
It's like the perfect thing to flip a slider. Yeah. Very elegant.
Yeah,
totally amazing stuff. I think it'd be so much fun to think of a use, particularly for the ones that seem like they're not functional. And you, Brian, you make these pieces. You're gonna have to describe
the other pieces.
It's like over my head for that. They were one.
I build like a little structure, space, and then either bisect it or quadrisect it, and then like the remnants. I love architecture and I love the idea of spaces, but then it's kind of also like what happens to these spaces once they've run their course, and so then cutting them up and then I guess I just turn them into scoops.
Right. So it's like two handles that have connected this thing that was once a hole,
mm-hmm.
and then it's split in half. So practically speaking, they'd be perfect salad.
You just love them for salad. Yeah.
Well, that's just what they would be with like a really beautiful metal bowl. Would that work with salad because of the acid in the vinaigrette?
The silver?
It would be hard on the silver. You'd just have to clean it afterwards.
Well, then that's interesting, like the whole care of silver and like how that was such like a big thing with silver.
But you have to take care of cast iron. You have to take care of, you know, a ceramic knife. You have to...
But they're like the opposite. So cast iron, you just let the crud build up and build up and build up, and that's what protects it. And then silver, it's like the opposite. You're fighting the crud.
Fighting the silver oxide, the tarnish.
So what happens when you let silver just go?
It turns like brownish.
It won't decompose. It'll always be there.
It just gets an oxide layer.
If you go to like a museum check out their deck arts, and sometimes you see the silver is like this crazy peacock blue color or like oxidize through the rainbow until eventually it's black.
And then you can never get it back.
No.
Oh, no, you can certainly can. Yeah. Because
I do have the silver set from
my...
Yes. I was telling Aaron last night that my grandmother... Because their families give them, and then... So my grandmother has many, and China, too. And it's kind of ridiculous because she's one woman who now lives by herself but has, like, enough China and silver to... keep you going for the next decade.
I'm interested.
But that's what we were talking about, was that people donate, sometimes people donate silver. And then, and Jaden does this, right? When people donate it, he gives them a screen print of the pattern.
He does like a roller print of it. But he kind of destroys it at the same time. Oh. So he'll cut out the platter part and then...
So he can take the print.
Yeah.
And this is how, like, so one of the pieces in the gallery is actually, it's on loan to us, but it's of this beautiful tray that was from India, and it has this incredibly intricate, like, engraving on one side, and then on the other side it just has, you know, like, the most slight maker's mark, I think. And one side is absolutely just, like, incredibly intricate, and then the other side is just, like, this ghost with a little bit of wear on the bottom. But he does this thing where, like, if you bring him the tray, he charges a pretty minimal amount, and then he'll give you the prints and stuff like that. But it's in some regards it's a really interesting thing to do, to take something that you might not want anymore, you might not have space for, you know, like, I mean, what do people use for trays anymore?
I actually use my silver trays for that's what I keep. It's my bar, essentially. Oh. Yeah. All my bottles are on it.
I thought you were going to say for all the times I have breakfast in bed.
No. Then it's just crumbs everywhere. But I do use them that way. But everything else just kind of hangs out.
Yeah, it becomes a decorative object that don't really have much, you know.
They are beautiful. You encourage the patina decay, right? That's something that you... you keep, or do you polish, or what do you think?
I've been polishing it off. Yeah, it's I always want to leave it, and then Aaron's like, you've got to clean it up. He's like, this is...
It has to be intentional. Like, in my work, I do a lot of I'm interested in transitions.
I think it looks better.
You have to say what you're going to say in a minute. We are almost out of time.
I'm interested in transitions, so I like it when the reactions happen, but it has to be an intentional part of the design. Uh-huh. Whereas the other pieces that are meant for daily use, they're not encouraged.
You would want someone to polish that.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. I'd want them really to use beautiful. It every day.
Yes. So if you use silver every day, you don't have to polish it?
That's right.
Oh, I should do that. Because that was my job when I was growing up, was polishing the silver. It's really a pain in the ass. It's so much. That's funny to think about that as part of your routine, as part of your daily. Like what you have to do as artists is polish silver occasionally, right? And you have to, you have an incredible collection of those beautiful chamois cloths that like my grandmother also has, like for putting all the piece, the oh, you know, the yeah. little sleeves.
The, yes. They have the silver woven into it, so basically like they catch any moisture oxidation.
Those are really nice. Where do you find those?
The Container Store. I love the
They have that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that's amazing. That's cool.
The great little pockets for your silver.
Well, thank you both so much for coming in. Everyone should take a class, check out what they do, buy a piece of work, and visit Brooklyn Metalworks, which is 640 Dean Street. Thank you guys for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.